Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Don't let those freezing temperatures fool you. Spring is here. And with that comes the annual migration of birds north and so on and so forth. Joining us to talk about the spring bird watching is Julie Zickafoos, author, artist, natural historian, member of the band The Rain Crows, which have a new CD out, by the way. Julie also is a regular NPR commentator. We're lucky to have her back on the show today. Welcome back, Julie.
Well, thank you so much.
So you've been griping about the weather on your blog lately, girl.
Yeah, I know. I'm a little tired of it. I just heard on the weather that it's going to be near freezing today.
or below.
That's just so awesome. It might get to freezing.
Yeah, it's really, really cold out. I was looking at your blog, and it's all snowy pictures. Is it actually snowy down there?
No, okay. But it could. It could at any moment. Right. No, I was actually, but having a rather full life, I sometimes get behind in the pictures that I post on my blog, and those photos were taken a couple of weeks ago. When we had a sort of a surprise, I won't say freak snowstorm because it's been a freak winter, but I was actually glad it stayed cold so that the photos seemed more relevant than if the daffodils were nodding.
Well, the daffodils almost are nodding here as well as in the snow. I learned a new phrase on your blog, sish ice.
Oh, sish ice, yeah. That came from my time in Newfoundland where they have many, many, many different words to describe different types of ice. And sish ice is the kind of ice that's thin enough to take a boat through, and it makes a sishing sound against the hull.
Yeah, I mean, it was and there's more descriptions of ice, too, so to check that out sometime. We had someone post a question for you. They said, I have read that audio bird calls that are used by some birders to have birds come forth and be viewed more easily can be overused and have male birds come to think that their territory is being invaded by another male, and then these males move elsewhere. Is that accurate, or do you know anything about that?
Well, sure, yeah, and I think that as a field trip guide, I have to be sensitive to the rights and of the birds on territory that we're trying to attract. Basically, what happens is, let's just say you have, for instance, at the New River Birding Festival in West Virginia, 35 people who've never seen a blue-winged warbler, and they really, really want to sing this bird, and you, as the guide, hear this bird singing some ways off in an old field. You whip out an iPod, and you cue up some speakers to the iPod, or maybe you have a nifty little unit that has it all in one, and you play the song of the blue-winged warbler. And if all goes well, that bird comes out like gangbusters and sits up on an exposed twig and sings, and everybody goes, ah, and they all get their life blue-winged warbler. That's when it's working right, and when you do it right. And then as soon as that bird comes in, you turn off that tape, and everybody's happy except maybe a slightly agitated territorial bird. Ideally, you leave, you never come back, he goes on with his life. Where it becomes a problem is in heavily birded areas where everybody's trying to see the same bird, like the elegant trogon that lives down in Ramsey Canyon, let's say in Arizona, and it's a birding hotspot, and everybody who goes there wants to see that bird, and they know where to go, and they know where to stand next to what tree, and they cue up their tape. Well, what happens if that bird spends all his time responding to tapes or digital recordings of his song? And so there are situations where it's highly inappropriate to do that.
If you have a question or comment for Julie Zickafoos, she's our guest for this hour. You can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. This is a very busy time of the year for you now.
Yeah, it is. It is. And I'm really kind of revving up. My New Year's resolution was to sort of gang speaking engagements so that if I'm flying somewhere to go speak, I'm going to try and rustle up a couple of other gigs in the area so that I'm not just going out to do a one strike and then coming home, because it's basically the same amount of preparation for three speaking gigs as it is for one.
Because I was going to say, are you going to get the Mother of the Year award, falling asleep? at a parent meeting.
I am continually up for Mother of the Year. Just one of those nominees, never a winner.
Yeah, this is what you get to learn about these kinds of incidents when you follow Julie on Facebook.
I'm the Susan Lucci of the Mother of the Year. Yeah, I fell asleep in a parent-teacher meeting last night, so sue me.
Yeah, but what was great is what you were dreaming about.
I fell asleep deeply enough to dream about ducks.
So
I thought I was hearing ducks quacking, and I had a big old bag of bread, and I was going to feed them.
Do you dream about birds a lot?
Yeah, I do. I do. I wish I could have more flying dreams, though. I don't have enough of those. Who does?
As if you are a bird, you mean?
Yeah. Do you ever have flying dreams?
Oh, yeah, I do.
Yeah, they're amazing, huh?
Yeah, they are. Mm-hmm. Well, so spring's coming up. Are there any good destinations you'd recommend for people in Central Ohio where they might head right now, despite the cold, to see something interesting that can only see this time of year?
What's moving right now mostly is waterfowl. And so any open water, large bodies of open water, Buckeye Lake might be a good destination. Reservoirs, of course, Lake Erie. Up along the shore, because the waterfowl are quite impervious to cold. They have incredibly thick down. You know, we wear it, and so do they. And so the lake shore is a really exciting place to be right now, especially if you like to freeze your nose off. But, it's great. There are a lot of waterfowl passing through in there and breeding plumage, so very beautiful. Other than that, there is a lot happening on the songbird front, you know, just in the yard. Birds are tuning up. Birds are singing. And I just find this time of year, even when it's cold, to be really, really stimulating because it seems that every day a new bird is singing. Like the field sparrows started this week, and that's one of my favorite little songs.
Does the cold affect the migration?
Somewhat. I mean, basically birds are taking cues from day length. And so they're going to move north as the day length is reaching the right time to sort of stimulate their hormonal secretions to make them want to fly, basically. So it doesn't affect it terrifically badly. The early migrants, like eastern phoebes, are living on, I would say, sumac and poison ivy fruit right now. You know, they can't find insects. So they're just eating fruit until they can.
And then we always get questions about feeding birds this time of year. It's okay to we've talked about this before. It's okay to feed birds as long as you're feeding them the right food year round.
Yes, it is. It is, as long as you're careful and you don't let stuff go moldy in the hot summer and you don't feed suet, for instance, in summer because it melts and gets greasy and gets on their feathers. I would say that what we do here is a very, very scaled back spring and summer feeding. Right now we're feeding bags and bags and bags of food because, of course, there's not a lot out there and it's very, very cold and the birds are ravenous. But as the weather warms up, the coons come in and tell us when to stop feeding because they dismantle our feeders and haul them off into the woods. So what we do is we just shift to putting out a couple handfuls of sunflower seed on the deck railing. You know, and just naturally cut the birds back and don't lose our shirt to feeding big fat coons.
Do you have a question about birding or anything to do with nature? Give us a call. Julie Zikafoos is with us for the hour, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org or check out our Facebook page and post your question or comment there. You can also tweet us at @WOSU All Sides. Do you use Twitter, Julie?
You know, I'm a terrible Twitter person. I'm more of a Facebook gal. I don't know why. I haven't sort of figured out Twitter. I follow you.
Well, then as you know, I won't finish that sentence. If you're stuck in the city, what are some ways that you can still appreciate spring? You said you can hear the field sparrow, but they're not necessarily going to be in the city. What about those city sparrows?
Well, yeah, I suppose they're starting to chirp and mate and get in behind the signs and, you know, stuff them full of garbage. But, you know, song sparrows are pretty common in city parks, and they're singing full-throated now and one of my favorite little songs. It's a jingly, wonderful song. The Cardinals, of course, are really tuning up. They start quite early. They start right around the equinox, and just have a beautiful, piercing whistle that just rings out. Robins are beginning to tune up. They should be around. Imagine those pigeons are starting to court.
Yeah, I've seen some pigeons. Hey, by the way, we have some sound of a song, Sparrow. So
do it.
Why don't we listen to that right now?
I'd love that.
Okay. Except for that weird piercing sound.
That's an interesting song, Sparrow. It's not actually too typical. I'm curious where that recording was made, but it seems a little bit less musical than ours. I have a song, Sparrow, that I'm very attached to. He showed up right around the 10th of October on our place, and he's distinguished by a snow-white cap, completely white flight feathers. His primaries on his wings are all white, and his tail is completely white. And he's got a big white throat patch. So he's technically a leucistic bird. Not completely albinistic, but just parts of him are snow white.
I wondered what leucistic meant.
Yeah, leucistic is sort of the birder's techno term for a bird that isn't a true albino. A true albino is one that has no pigmentation anywhere. Its eyes are red or perhaps light blue. It has no pigmentation on its feet or bill, and its feathers are snow white. But most birds fall into the leucistic category, and that's spelled L-E-U-C-I-S-T-I-C.
Go ahead.
It's a partial expression of albinism, sort of.
Well, you were pretty blown away by that.
Oh, yeah. It's an absolutely beautiful little bird. And I'm actually about to do a blog post about him because I've been photographing him since October, so I've sort of followed his arc. And I was very distressed to find his mate sick and dying in the backyard. Couldn't help her. And I'm not sure what it was, something infectious. But I think he's got another one. I just saw him chasing a song sparrow this morning, so I'm rooting for him.
I apologize, because when I said you were pretty blown away from him, I was thinking of your blog post about another leucistic...
There was a hawk.
Yeah.
A red-tailed hawk that I saw. That was actually an albino.
Oh.
And it may be the same one. There is one nesting for the second year in a row near the Williamstown exit on Route 77 in West Virginia, just across the river from Marietta. And I have yet to go find that bird, but people are always saying, hey, I saw an all-white red-tailed hawk, and I think, well, good for you. But, man, when you see your first one circling against a blue sky, it just knocks your socks off. So, yeah, be on the lookout along the, I think it's exit 179, if I'm not mistaken, on Route 77 near Williamstown, West Virginia.
My guest is Julie Zicafous, author. Her latest book is called The Bluebird Effect, Uncommon Bonds with Common Birds. Artist, of course. You can see many of her paintings in that book. And a commentator for NPR. If you have a question or comment for Julie, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
On August 22, 2011, Principal Tanisha Williams Minor launched DC Met's school year.
It's a good day. I'm excited. First day of school.
And from that day forward, teachers and administrators work to keep at-risk kids in class and on track to graduate. I'm Neil Conan, turning failing schools around. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation this afternoon from 2 to 4 on 89.7 NPR News. Cloudy skies today, maybe a little sun and a high near 32 degrees. Partly cloudy tonight and cold again, a low of 20. Mostly sunny for tomorrow with a high near 40. Support comes from Homeport Nobo on Long Condominiums, offering homeownership opportunities in the King Lincoln District, featuring green design buildings within walking distance of local stores and restaurants. Details at homeportohio.org/NOBO on Long. All Sides continues. This is 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. My guest is Julie Zicafous. If you have a question or comment for her, give us a call, 614-292-8513. She's the author of The Bluebird Effect, Uncommon Bonds with Common Birds. And she's a great naturalist and not a bad singer either. You have a new CD out.
We're out. We're shooting for May.
Okay.
Yeah,
right.
we're just now wrapping recording on it. We laid down the last tracks two nights ago. One was some Irish flute on a song that I played, and
oh, that's right. You're we're both
there. It was not as good as you.
What do you mean?
No, you play real flute. I play like fake faux flute. I don't have any back holes or keys to worry about, you know.
Okay, well, just bring it with you.
I'll try.
Okay.
So we're it's going to be called Dream of Flying Dream, and named after a song that Bill wrote, and we're very excited about it because we're recording the entire thing in our basement using ProLogic software on a Mac. So it's it feels like the brave new world of recording for us because we have access to effects and amp sounds through this software that just would blow your mind. If we need the ocean, we cue up the ocean. It's just an amazing thing.
Ed in Baltimore, you're on the air with Julie Zickafoos. Welcome, Ed.
Yes, thank you. You mentioned the comment about the transition to spring, and I always know spring is coming regardless of the weather when I get the first red-winged blackbirds at the theater. That's always been our sign that things are coming on, and I like the transition because the juncos aren't gone, but the first red-winged blackbirds and the grackles are there now, and this is the first year also that because apparently of the eruption of the birds from the north, I was actually able to get a good view and know the difference between the purple finch and the house finch at our feeder this year.
Yay. Hey, I'm enjoying my red wings and grackles, too. And, in fact, right now as I speak, I'm looking out. I just bought some coarse-cracked corn for them, and I'm looking at three American crows eating the corn, which is actually kind of a rare event because crows are so wary and so shy. But I adore red wings and grackles, and a lot of people have this bias against them because they're blackbirds and they've been taught their whole life that blackbirds are vermin. But, in fact, they are wonderful, noteworthy native birds, spring migrants coming through in flocks, and they come through in single-sex flocks, so the first ones to come through are the males. And those male grackles in the sun, there's almost nothing more beautiful than that bronzy head and purple sheen on the back. It's just beautiful.
Yes, and I like to watch the different displays as they show off against each other or maybe aggressively decide that this bird's not one I'm supposed to have around me, and how they flare their tails and puff up to try to scare off another bird that they think is a rival.
I love that too. The grackles will do the sky pointing thing with their bill, and then completely inflate as if someone blew them up with a bicycle pump, and then just as quickly deflate and go about their business. It's really fun to watch.
Yes, it is. And our spring peepers are finally back, too. I've heard them in our creek for the last 2 weeks now.
I bet they're quiet now.
This morning they were very quiet, yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I actually wrote a little poem about that this morning. You want to hear it?
Yes.
Everything's frozen. Salamander eggs encased. No peepers peeping. So the birds step in. Dinosaurs, hot blood coursing through their singing veins. While the frog lies stilled, crystals in his very cells. Toey serves hot tea.
Very nice. I saw that on Facebook as well. Ed, thanks for your call. We appreciate it. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org if you want to have a question or comment for Julie Zickafoos. This is from Marianne on Facebook, and she says, I played the song of an Eastern Toey on my phone last year, and my resident Toey, who had just returned for the spring, departed for good.
Well, how often did she play it?
I don't know. It's from Facebook. So, Marianne, give us some more information there.
I will say that it's pretty hard to drive a bird off territory that it's fought to attain. And what is more likely to happen if you play a tape around a territorial bird is that it will simply acclimate to the song and ignore it eventually. It's comparatively rare to actually drive a bird from its territory with a recorded song. Not that I would do it, heedlessly or more than once a season, really. Or, you know, like, for instance, we have Kentucky warblers on our land. Invariably, we have people come to visit who've never seen one. So we ask them if they'd like to see one. We will call a male Kentucky warbler on a known territory. We'll call him up to the edge of the woods. As soon as he comes, we turn off the tape. He goes back to his business. Our visitor leaves happy. But we don't do it more than once or twice a season.
Lee in Worthington, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. Is it? Did you say Lee?
Yes, I did.
Okay. All right. Thanks for taking my call.
Welcome.
Julie, I am slowly reading your Bluebird Effect and loving it so much. We're a family of bird geeks. I've got a 9 and 10-year-old who are both young birders, part of the Young Birders Club. And we've had a great winter with the finch invasion and managed to get redpole and pine siskin into our suburban feeders, which is exciting. But I have a question. Your book, The Bluebird Effect, has caused me to look at individual birds instead of just citing a species. I'm starting to know the different cast of characters that have been coming to our feeders. And we have a house finch that has a feather kind of about at its shoulder that is just sticking due north. I mean, just sort of straight up in the air. Mm-hmm. And it has been that way all winter that I've noticed it and still as I speak. And I'm wondering about that feather. Will it always have that, or will it finally kind of molt away and maybe have a normal feather in its place? What can you tell me?
Yeah, sure. That's probably just a broken shaft on an individual feather and, you know, causing it to stick up. I had a bluebird like that. I named him Shoulders, and I was so thankful for that feather because I could tell, you know, when he would come in a flock, I knew I could always find Shoulders.
Right.
And that's actually the secret to what I do, is figuring out how to identify an individual bird and then following that bird. The song sparrow I mentioned earlier with the white wings and tail and cap, he's a no-brainer, you know. Now I'm completely cued into him. I know where all his song perches are. I've photographed him endlessly. And you're lucky to have that finch, you know, to focus on, because it's when you make that connection with the individual bird that the magic starts to happen.
I think so, and I really want this opportunity to thank you for that gift.
Because thank you so much.
We also have a very white chickadee, similar thing. You've taught us to have those eyes, so thank
you. Yeah, just find that bird, and, you know, it's funny. You can usually find some distinguishing mark on almost any bird if you look at it closely enough, and sometimes it's just behavioral. You know, it's like, oh, he always sits on this perch, or he sings from here, you know, and you can sort of figure out that it's the same bird, given that they have many birds have territories and stake them out, you can be fairly sure that it's the same bird coming again and again, especially during the spring and summer when they're defending territory. So, yeah, keep up those observations, and the more you look, the more you'll learn.
Thank you, Lee in Worthington, for that. You know, Lee, you can thank Julie in person. Julie, you're going to be in Worthington next week, right?
I am.
Wednesday.
Wednesday, March 27th, starting at 6:30 p.m. I'll be at the Griswold Senior Center across from the Worthington Library. And that is, I'm going to give a talk called Rooted in Appalachia. It's just going to be a sort of it's kind of a love song to the southeast corner of Ohio, but it has, you know, broad relevance to anyone who lives in Ohio and loves nature. And I'm very excited about that. And Steve Herminghausen has been my contact at the library. He's been delightful. He's trying out different cookie recipes for the reception.
Okay, I'll be there.
How about oatmeal chocolate chip cherry?
Holy Toledo.
I know. I haven't had a cookie in like 2 years, and now he's baking it. Awesome.
Well, that is one of two events that Julie will be at in the Central Ohio area. If you want to get more information about those, you can go to our website at WOSU.org/allsides and learn all about it. Email from Jamie. Writes, a large hawk has taken to hunting in my backyard. It's taken to sitting near or even on top of the bird feeder waiting for a meal. Any way to discourage this? And also, Jamie writes, the best way to discourage the neighbor's cat from hunting under the bird feeder. These questions come up all the time, Julie.
Sure, yeah. Well, a lot of people don't like my hawk answer, which is that there are so many fewer hawks than there are juncos and sparrows that my advice to people who have hawks frequenting their yards, as I do, is to enjoy them. They're having a hard time out there. They're trying to find food. They realize that you have attracted a concentration of birds. A bird, generally the adult hawks won't sit right on the feeder. That's sort of an obvious move. Usually the juveniles will do that. It's like, maybe if I sit here, someone will come to eat some seed. But what I have now is an adult male sharp-shinned hawk who comes through the yard like he's been shot from a bow and, you know, grabs a junco and keeps going. So my advice is, I wouldn't discourage the hawk. I'd say, oh, cool, the hawk is here. Let's watch him while he is. As far as cats, there are a number of things you can do. Some people recommend putting a low fence of perhaps a foot and a half to 2 feet in a ring around your feeding station so that a cat dashing from cover to grab something at the feeder would have to jump it, mm-hmm. and the birds would have a little bit more time to clear that, to get clear before it comes. Another method for discouraging cats is one that was recommended to me by a Minnesota wildlife official. I thought it was brilliant. A lot of people in suburban situations have situations where they have known cats, pets of neighbors, that are coming over and helping themselves at the bird feeder, which is infuriating for those of us who feed birds and really shouldn't happen. But, you know, repeated requests to keep the cat in don't work. So this guy recommends filling a super soaker squirt gun with vinegar and firing it at the cat. And the cat isn't harmed, but in licking the vinegar off its fur, decides not to return to the place where that happened. So that's a non-lethal discouragement that can work as well.
Yeah, and you don't have to be mean about it. Just get it on its fur.
Yeah.
So that it has that really,
yuck.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but, you know, a cat will try to clean themselves, and so they'll get that taste. And hopefully that's some aversive conditioning, a one-shot deal that might actually keep a cat from returning. Worth a try if you have a cat that's taking birds under your feeder.
Chris in Columbus. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Hi. I had a quick comment. I was really, really excited about hearing the show. My wife and I recently decided to name our first daughter Cardinal. So I thought that it was somewhat, you know, relevant and funny that we would have a bird talk today. But I also had a question. We live in an apartment, and what can I do, you know, without altering, obviously, you know, the building, to encourage birds to nest in and around the area where it's going to, you know, be good for their behavior. I don't want to, like, disrupt, like, the natural flow of the ecosystem and that sort of thing. But, you know, obviously there's different wildlife issues coming in an urban setting like that.
So you're in an apartment building, like many floors up, or?
No, it's in an apartment complex. Like, there's a lot of buildings closely packed together,
uh-huh.
and there's, like, some trees, but, you know, they're limited, and, you know, there's a lot of dumpsters and, you know, squirrels and things like that, and so I don't
right.
want to, like, mess with the nesting of, you know, squirrels by, you know, trying to put up a feeder somewhere where it would be allowed. I kind of want to let it happen naturally, but I guess I didn't know what your suggestion would be, or if you known people that have done things like this.
Yeah, I guess it depends, you know, if you're allowed to plant anything of your own, because really, if you're trying to encourage birds nesting, planting thick evergreen shrubs that would provide cover would be one approach. I'm also a huge fan of container gardening, and, you know, a big planter filled with flowers can attract birds in to feed on the insects or perhaps on the nectar. You can find lots of hummingbird-friendly plants online, and you know, there are many, many things that you can plant that will bring birds in surprising places. You know, but I guess I'd lean toward container gardening if you're not allowed to plant anything in the ground right out there, and just kind of create a little oasis. And of course, offering water is probably the most important thing you can do to bring birds in. So, you know, a shallow bird bath and a bird bath with a dripper or a fountain that recirculates is a very powerful attractant.
Thank you, Chris, for that call. An email from Bob in Hilliard writes, "This is my first year to lay wild bird seed along the top of my patio fence. I discovered how bold chickadees and red-breasted nuthatches can become. A nuthatch will pick a peanut out of a cup of seeds held in my hand. Will all the red-breasted nuthatches head north to Canada soon?"
Yes, they will. And red-breasted nuthatches are a great favorite here. It was an invasion year for them, as well as for the finches and crossbills and grosbeaks. And I have a couple here that I had one take a bath in a bird bath that I was actually trying to clean. It's like I had to just stop what I was doing and wait for him. And they also will just stay on the feeder when you come up. I'm not quite sure why red-breasted nuthatches are so confiding. One theory is that they are hatched and grow up in boreal forest where they've never seen a human being before. It's one theory.
I love how you use the word confiding.
Mm. Yeah, confiding is a, yeah, it's kind of a birder's term. Confiding as opposed to skulky or elusive.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Ted in Columbus, you're on the air with Julie Zickafoos. Welcome. Hi, Ted. Hello, Ted. Okay.
Hello, are you there?
Yeah, sorry about that, Ted. Ann's pushing wrong buttons.
Okay. Hey, this is Ted. Yeah, thank you so much for the book. I bought that book for my wife last year.
The Bluebird Effect.
Yeah, we started on this journey by visiting my wife's cousin in Massachusetts named Mark Lynch, who took us on a birding thing, and it just blew us away.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I had no idea. He could hear a bird a mile away and know what it was. And he and his wife were walking us towards the birds, and it was fantastic. So anyway, we are now actively feeding in our yard using your book. And our grandchildren are very enthralled by our feeders. And one neat thing is we also listen to a wonderful CD by Elizabeth Mitchell, Little Bird. It's got all kind of bird songs on it, and it's just fabulous. But I'm very excited to get your CD when it comes out as well. So
thank you so much
for what you're doing.
Well, I'm a huge Mark Lynch fan. He's another of my favorite radio personality interviewers. He's a brilliant man and just is very, very well versed in art. And although he and I have our differences on who we like as far as bird painters, but that's wonderful to hear that little connection there. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Ted, for that call. My guest is Julie Zickafoos. We were just talking about her latest book. It's called The Bluebird Effect: Uncommon Bonds with Common Birds. If you have a question or comment for Julie Zickafoos, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Some of you are contacting us via Facebook. That's always helpful. And you can tweet us at WOSU All Sides. For more information about where Julie will be appearing in Columbus area next week, you can go to our website at WOSU.org/All Sides. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Last year was the hottest year on record in the U.S. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Justin Gillis about his New York Times series, Temperature Rising, which examines the latest research on climate change. He says mainstream scientists
don't know how bad it's going to get and how fast it's going to get that way, which might be the ultimate question.
Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon. And be sure to join All Sides with Ann Fisher Friday for a discussion of how pets can make us better people. And then a panel will discuss the best places to visit in Ohio for spring travel and tourism. That's All Sides with Ann Fisher and All Sides Weekend tomorrow from 10 until noon on 89.7 NPR News. King George V and Queen Mary faced dramatic social change following the First World War. Watch The Royals Who Rescued the Monarchy. It's tonight at 10 on WOSU-TV. Clouds today with a high near 32, partly cloudy tonight, and a low of 20 degrees. Support for 89.7 comes from Home Care Assistance in Home Care for Older Adults, with a philosophy of promoting health, well-being, and quality of life for all clients, no matter their limitations. Information on Home Care Assistance is at 481-8888. That's 481-8888. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. My guest is Julie Zickafoos, naturalist, artist, author, musician, NPR commentator. If you have a question or comment for her, give us a call, 614-292-8513. We also have an email from Jay in Westerville, Julie. He says, I just happened to look out my front window last week and saw a loose V formation of birds flying north. I could tell they weren't geese because they had long legs trailing behind. My first thought was herons, but I have never seen them flock together. Could they have been sandhill cranes? I have seen and heard them in northern Michigan, but this would be my first time to see them in Ohio.
They could certainly have been sandhill cranes, and the one key difference besides the long legs trailing out behind is the sandhill crane flies with the neck extended straight, whereas a heron kinks it up into an S-curve. So if you happen to notice that detail, if they looked sort of double-ended like a cross, then they probably were sandhills, and this is right in time for them to be migrating.
You know that day that you took some photographs on a walk with your dog? And posted them in your blog, and I went out that morning as well because it was only in the morning here mm-hmm. where it was so perfect, where the snow just, you know, fell perfectly. It was absolutely a fairyland. And I was out by the Olentangy River and saw, you know, amid all of this beauty, I think it was a great blue heron.
Oh,
just
sure.
kind of took off. Yeah. So that's that one picture with the huge blur.
Yeah, you know, the herons are getting real busy. They're refurbishing their nests in all the rookeries around the state right now. There's a big old Cahoga Falls rookery that people talk about and monitor, and the herons are coming in and putting fresh sticks in and getting ready to lay their eggs. In fact, they should be laying right around now. Amazing to think that these things would be laying eggs when it's, you know, in the 20s outside, but they sit tight and they hatch them.
Greg in Columbus, you're on the air with Julie Zickafoos. Welcome, Greg.
Thank you. Love the conversation. I'm also a really big fan of raptors and hawks. I live on one of the urban ravines, and we've had a pair of sharpshins or Cooper's hawks that have nested here for years in some of our ash trees, which unfortunately had emerald ash borer and all got cut down. So they've migrated, and they've recently come back, and they seem a little confused. We also have a red-tail hawk that's moved into the neighborhood. And I'm just wondering, you know, will the sharpshins try to find another place to nest, or is the red-tail going to chase them off?
Hmm. Well, if you're in a somewhat suburban situation, my guess would be that you're looking at Cooper's hawks.
Okay.
They're larger than the sharpshins. Sharpshins tend to be deep woods nesters, and we are lucky enough to have a couple. I've documented four nests on our 80-acre sanctuary, but we are surrounded by woods on all sides. Cooper's hawks have become the suburban and urban nesting exhibitor hawk, especially around Columbus. They are loving it, and they are unperturbed by human activity and will nest. They're very, very flexible. I wouldn't worry about your hawks finding a more suitable place. You know, just because those ash trees were cut down doesn't mean you're going to lose them. I'm not sure that red tails have any quibble with Cooper's hawks. I wouldn't expect territoriality from a red tail toward a Cooper's hawk because they have a completely different prey base. Cooper's hawks are bird specialists. They run, you know, take a blinding dash through your yard and grab themselves a sparrow or a junco, whereas red-tailed hawks are more into mammals and reptiles. They will take snakes, rabbits, groundhogs, that kind of thing.
All right. Thanks a lot, Greg, for that call. From Greg on Facebook, he writes, I was astonished to hear the call of an owl in my backyard, which happens to be near a ravine in Clintonville. Maybe this is the same Greg. Any idea what type of owl I might have heard? There is a resident red-tailed hawk that happens to live there as well.
If I had to guess, if you are near a ravine in Clintonville, you have three owl choices for the common owls around here. And if it was this time of year, we're narrowing it down considerably, and I'm going to vote great horned owl, which goes ooh, 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 ooh. Barred owl is also another ravine dweller, but they aren't calling just yet. They nest a little later in the season than great horns. Great horns should be on eggs as early as January. So they're sounding, they're really hooting a lot now. Barred owls are the classic one who asks, who cooks for you, who cooks for you all? And they go, so it should be pretty easy to differentiate between those two calls. screech owls are certainly around. They're a suburban owl, and that's a little whinny of a call, kind of a like that. But you won't be hearing them until probably April. So my strongest guess would be great horned.
I think that's the first time you've ever done such a series of bird calls.
Yeah.
You're really good. I mean, not that I would know.
Kind of a dangerous precedent, I think.
I think that's really cool now. What do we need bird sounds for when we have you? I'll just say, just make the sound, Julie.
Right. There's some I can and some I can't.
give my intern a break there. An email. Well, let's get to a call real quick. Let's see if I can hang up on somebody else now. Bob in Marysville, you're on the air. Welcome, Bob.
Hi, Julie. Hi.
Hi.
I got a bird identification question. I live in Marysville in a kind of wooded subdivision, and last summer there was a big hawk hanging around most of the summer. And I got a close look at it when my dog, which is a miniature dachshund, about 15 pounds, was going nuts in the backyard, and I looked up, and there about 20 feet above him was this hawk on a branch. Looked like an eagle eyeing up the dog.
Oh, boy.
And I walked out over there, and the hawk, of course, saw me, and it just sort of took off, flapped its wings, sort of like a 747 taking off. It was just sort of flap, 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 flap. But that was the biggest darn hawk I ever seen. I was wondering, and it was a hawk. It had the breast and the markings of it. I wonder what large hawks hang around here.
Well, did you notice anything about the color of the bird? Did it have...
Well, it had the speckled breast.
Okay.
And it was a deep deep brown.
Okay, a deep brown. And you say the speckled breast. Are you talking about dark speckles on a white ground?
Yeah.
Okay. Most likely candidate would be a red-tailed hawk. And I would say that a 15-pound mini doxy would be squarely within the prey zone for that bird. So... Be careful.
Gosh.
Yeah.
I guess.
Be careful.
Okay.
Yeah, I worry about that. I don't think it's terribly common, but, you know, anything that can tackle a groundhog could tackle a dachshund.
Good point.
Yeah. Yeah, but just keep an eye on that. Just check the sky before you let him out.
All right, Bob in Marysville, thanks for that call. We do have one more bird sound, and you wanted us to use this of the mockingbird.
Yes.
Let's listen to that, and then let's talk. So, The Mockingbird.
Just one of my favorite songs. And one of my favorite things to do, I mean, as a card-carrying bird nerd, is to sit near a singing mockingbird with a little piece of paper and a pen and jot down everything I hear him imitating. And if you get a good mockingbird who's all head up and he goes on and you can get 30 or 40 different species from his song. And it's the best practice I know of for practicing birding by ear, because their imitations are flawless and just such fun to jot down what they're doing. And one of the really cool things about mockingbirds when they sing is, let's say a mockingbird imitates the song of an eastern bluebird, does the whistle, the typical song. It will then often run through every bluebird call it knows. It'll then go to the alarm call. It will go to the juvenile begging call. It'll go to the pre-copulation call. And so it's like going to school, sitting at the feet of this master singer. I just completely adore mockingbirds, and I wish we had more of them. I wrote a little poem about a mockingbird. Want to hear it?
Yes.
This was 2 days ago, and I'm thrilled to pieces to have a mocker singing at my neighbor's house on my running route. A mockingbird spins poems of magnolia moonlight in cold old Whipple. I'm in reverie. Pull your gray flannel closer, natty gentleman. Take me to Georgia.
Oh, nice, Joy. Very
they're,
nice.
They're just very plain-looking birds, gray flannel feathers, but man, they just sing of the South to me.
Kathy in Westerville. Welcome to the show, Kathy.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a quick question. I live near some elderly neighbors, and they're worried if I try to feed the birds. They're afraid of bird flu, and they're also afraid that it might bring rodents. How much of that is true?
Okay, bird flu. Wow, they're afraid you'll bring disease by feeding birds?
Yeah.
That's a new one. Wow. Yeah, a lot of people are kind of phobic about birds, and it comes out in strange ways, but bird flu is something you worry about in huge poultry houses, you know, in China, right? It's not really, bird flu isn't prevalent in the U.S. and certainly not in a wild population like this. So I think that's groundless. As far as rodents, sure, chipmunks and squirrels are happy to take advantage. Are you in a suburban or urban situation?
Suburban.
Suburban. And you're worried about what your neighbors are saying because...
Well, I don't want to cause any problems.
Okay, let's get right down to brass tacks. Do you care? And
why do we care?
Yeah, right.
Apparently I do, but maybe not so much. Okay.
Maybe not so much now.
No. You're being a good neighbor to ask, but now you have some information. So.
Yeah, that's true. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Don't worry about disease.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Reading too many... scary books or watching too many scary movies or something.
I'd like to have her as a neighbor, actually, if she worries that much about what I think about what she does. That's awesome.
We have an email from Karen. She says, could you have Julie speak about how birds perform insect and rodent control for us so people can stop using poison and insecticides so much?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. They're years ago, I used to put up bluebird boxes on other people's property, and you know, I'd find a beautiful, well-mown yard, you know, that would be perfect for bluebirds, and I'd go in and put the box up, and then I'd see them using, like, Kemlon. And it wouldn't have occurred to me to say, oh, by the way, you know, you can't use pesticides around birds. There are a lot of people who think you can have it all. You can have the perfectly groomed lawn with the chemicals in it and a box of happy nesting bluebirds. Unfortunately, it doesn't work that way. The chemicals that you use on your lawn, even the herbicides, will kill birds like bluebirds and robins. And so I look at a lawn that is not perfect as a little bit of natural diversity, you know. I'm much more interested in some of the broadleaf stuff that comes up and blooms, even a dandelion, which offers seeds to birds like indigo buntings and juncos and tree sparrows, you know, just put up with a little diversity in your lawn. You can't do both. You have to pick one or the other. And I had a heartbreaking call from a woman who's become a good friend since. You know, her husband had sprayed all around the base of their bluebird box, and she found the babies dead in the box.
Aww.
Yeah. So it's not fair to the birds. If you're going to do the chemically groomed lawn, don't put up bird boxes. Don't put up bird feeders. But the birds are out there controlling insects all the time, and just give them a chance to do their work.
Penny in Columbus, you're on the air with Julie Zickafoos. Welcome, Penny.
Hi. I have a question about hummingbirds. I don't have any, and I want some. My neighbor has a bird feeder, and she feeds birds and she feeds squirrels, and I don't know if the squirrels are making the hummingbirds stay away.
No. It probably has more to do with just not having enough natural attractants in the area for the hummingbirds. My answer to getting hummingbirds in is to plant masses of the kinds of flowers that they like. And
okay.
Yeah, and containers are great for this. You know, some of the single fuchsias and in your garden, the best plants you can plant are salvias. There are many, many different salvias, many of them Mexican, which have red, blue flowers, tubular corollas that the hummingbirds adore. So I start with a foundation garden, and then the feeders are almost secondary to that. Certainly hanging up a feeder by about, I'd say, April 17th is the day when hummingbirds get in southern Ohio, so up your way probably be more around the 20th. But have your feeder up by then, and one trick that you can use is to tie a big red bow on the feeder, you know, as an additional visual attractant, and see if you can bring them in. It's going to be hit or miss, but I wouldn't worry about squirrels as far as scaring away hummingbirds. What's probably happening is they just aren't seeing the kinds of flowers they prefer.
Okay, thanks a lot, Penny, for that call. I want to quick get to Jennifer. Hi, Jennifer in Westerville. You're on the air. Tell us the exciting news.
Hi. I was listening a little earlier, and there was a gentleman who was wondering what owl was calling in his ravine in Clintonville.
Mm-hmm. And I live right next to the reservoir up on the side of Hoover in Westerville on a ravine. And I've had barred owls for this is my third season living here. And this is the third year they're living with me. And they're already nesting and calling, and he's flying food into her. And
no
you know,
way,
so,
really? The barred owls are already on eggs.
Yeah, as far as I know, I mean, she's in the box all the time, and, you know, they're calling back and forth. And
fantastic.
I just saw him fly a rather large, looks like a field mouse in yesterday.
So,
I mean, I can see them really well because
yeah.
of the way the ravine drops off and where I have put the box. So
you put a box up and you got barred owls in it.
Yeah, this is the second season they're using the box. The first year when I moved in, they were in my chimney, which was not convenient. So we evicted them from the chimney and put up a box, and they've been using the box since then.
Andy, you still have your conservationist gold stars that you can give out? Are you out of them?
I'm speechless. I mean, I'm thinking when you moved there, they were nesting in your chimney.
Yeah, they were in the chimney. Well, it's one of these big old 60s jobs. It's got two dummy chimneys and a real one in the middle, and they were in one of the dummy sides.
Okay.
Oh,
but
it was
exposed, and they didn't do real well that year. They lost two out of three chicks, and the large male was killed by a car that went by. But since then, she's remated. We had two successful chicks last year. We saw them pop out of the box, and now this year they're back.
Oh, do you have any idea how rare this is? I mean, how completely cool that is.
We have some really great pictures.
Ah, that is so cool. And, you know, I love stories like this where people say, well, you know, they were nesting my chimney, and then we couldn't really have them there, so we put up a box, and then they used that. I mean, that's just the coolest.
Well, Jennifer, thanks for that call.
Oh, you're welcome.
Have a great season.
Good to know they've already started. And, you know, it could have something to do with the fact that they have a really well-protected, weatherproof box that they're starting so early. Barred owls will often nest in like a broken-off snag top of a tree, so they're very subject to spring rains and nasty, nasty weather. So how deluxe for them to have a real box.
We have a tweet from Jim, and we just have about a minute, Julie, but he asks, we got to go with the tweets, girl. He says, Anne, could you ask Julie about her experience of the intelligence of crows?
Oh, yeah. Well, a lot of people saw that nature special on crows. I missed it. But, they're incredibly discerning creatures. And one of the things that really pops out about them is their ability to discern individual human beings one from another. And, you know, the crows that are eating the corn out here, trust me, but let somebody else stand in the studio, they're gone. So, yeah, crows are scary smart. Scary smart and always doing something interesting. And you can be sure when you're watching a crow that it's watching you right back.
Are crows the really big ones that like to group, like they're sometimes in threes and fours?
Yeah, and they call a lot.
And they talk, and they, right.
Yep. And they seem to have a sort of a cooperative nesting thing going on. If you'll have a whole bunch of crows in the neighborhood, it's probably likely that only one pair out of that group will be nesting. And it may be that other members of the group are helping feed their young.
Well, Julie Zikafoos, thanks so much for joining us today as usual. It was a lot of fun.
Always fun.
And remind people, Julie is going to be in Columbus next week. We'd love to see those owl pictures, huh, Julie?
Oh,
To check out where and when, go to our website at WOSU.org, and we'll have links for you there. Thanks to the All Sides staff. Including producer Michael DeBonis, associate producer Amy Jurevich, assistant producers Corinne Gleckler and Rachel Quimby, production assistants Karim Shaban and Leticia Wiggins, video production by Rich Karsmitsky and Amber Karsmitsky. Alan DeCenzo is the composer of our theme music. WOSU News and Public Affairs Director Mike Thompson, Radio Operations Director Kevin Petrola, Senior Broadcast Technician Eric French. Thanks again for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is listener-supported WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus, and streaming on the web at WOSU.org, 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station, a service of WOSU Public Media.